The next matter the court has on its docket is Baldwin versus Conwell. Hassan Belli, how much time would you like to reserve for rebuttal?
Yeah, I may have reserved 3 minutes.
Yes.
Thank you.
And you may begin whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, my name is Melissa Hassan Belli from the Office of the Public Defender for Fairfax County on behalf of Mr. Roland Baldwin. This case is simple. The code says the court shall limit victim impact testimony to specifically enumerated clauses. The court refused to do that in this case, and that was error. First, 19.2-295.3 says that victim impact testimony, that a victim may testify about the impact of the offense.
Well, counsel, let me just stop you there, since that might or leads me to a question, which is, if in fact, given what the offense is here, that the prior events would inform how this particular event impacted her, why wouldn't that be proper under the statutory scheme?
Because the statute specifically limits the testimony to specific provisions about the offense. It does not, that is where the admissibility gateway starts. Victim impact testimony historically has not been allowed. It is a recent development in case law. And the Virginia Victims' Rights Statute, which was enacted, I believe it was 1995, opened the door slightly. It opened the door to...
I take some issue with your statement that victim impact testimony wasn't allowed. It wasn't mandated. But courts, as long as I've been around, have been hearing testimony from victims concerning anything that the court deems relevant to consider in terms of sentencing.
Your Honor, in the Booth case, which was decided by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1987, the court said that the Eighth Amendment prohibits the consideration of victim impact testimony. Booth was then overruled in Payne in 1991, saying that the Eighth Amendment does not specifically prohibit that testimony. And then we have the enactment of the Virginia Supreme Court, or the Virginia Victims' Rights Bill of Rights. That specifically limited victim impact testimony to the specific provisions enumerated in 299.1. It is not, the standard is for admissibility is not any relevant testimony that the victim wants to testify about.
How do you square that with our holding in Harvey?
Yes, Harvey interprets the statute. Harvey interprets 299.1, and what Harvey's holding is that it was not an abuse of discretion for the trial court to admit into evidence the sort of factual scenario of the offense for which Harvey was being sentenced. It did not, Harvey did not expand.
It's the circumstances of the crime.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
It says circumstances of the crime. Why? I mean, that's the language that's used in Harvey.
Yes.
Why wouldn't the past events which inflated or impacted her fear and her response in terms of the victim's fear and response not be a circumstance within the understanding of Harvey?
The way that Harvey, that I understand Harvey is that it was interpreting that last provision of 299.1, and specifically Harvey said the circumstances of the crime, similarly to the way that 299.1 says that the person may testify about the offense. Harvey is entirely consistent with what the plain language of the statute.
I'd like to ask you to look at 19.2-299.1 subparagraph 3, the plain language of the statute. Identify
yes,
the nature and extent of any physical or psychological injury suffered by the victim as a result of the offense. I think the terms nature and extent of an injury in the very definition of what that would take to show allows for a far broader view of what can be testified to, particularly in this case. The nature here, as I understand the testimony, is she's frightened. She's been frightened by this individual, not only with respect to this offense, but the fear was, the extent of it was even greater because she had a history with this individual who continued similar threatening behavior. The nature, fear, While fear can't be explained necessarily in one moment in time, similarly, the word extent suggests to me that you would have to go beyond the narrow view that you're taking here on impact. But maybe you have a different way of looking at those two words.
Yes, Your Honor, I'd like to address that question. I think the entirety of subsection 3 does say that the nature and extent of the physical psychological injury suffered by the victim as a result of the offense. I think that is consistent that the victim can testify about obviously there was no physical injury in this case, but the psychological injury that resulted from this offense.
The offense is the catalyst of the current fear. But I don't think you can talk about fear with respect to one incident without looking at the buildup, the foundation for it, and the extent similarly. I don't know how you can talk about extent in this case particularly without getting into the ongoing historical fearful interchange.
You know,
I don't see it. I don't know how you get to extent.
You know, the error in this case was that the trial court admitted into evidence the actual evidence of a prior conviction, the threats themselves that were made. They allowed into evidence what that was.
Well, what if it were convictions? What if it's just threats that were never charged? Can you do that?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Aside from convictions, if they were just testimony about threats, is that sufficient? Is that pass muster, do you think?
No, Your Honor.
You're not just arguing it was convictions that you felt should be excluded.
Yes, Your Honor. My argument is it is the actual evidence that needed to be excluded. It's the evidence that of that 2001 okay. conviction and the impact of that 2001 conviction.
What do we do when we're dealing with an ongoing and continuing offense? This offense for which he was convicted was not a discrete offense in the life of this woman. Her fear was building as this series of events went on and the stalking and the threats became more significant to her. Isn't she entitled to explain why she has reached this level of apprehension and concern?
What I argued in the trial court and what is consistent, I believe, with my argument today is that the court could hear and did hear that there was a prior conviction and that the same person was the victim in the prior conviction as in this conviction. The reason the court erred is because they allowed the victim to testify about the specific evidence of 2001 conviction and the specific impact of that 2001 conviction on the victim.
But isn't the escalating series of events that the defendant is involved in relevant to the court considering the legitimacy of the apprehension this victim has?
Your Honor, the relevancy is not, the victim impact statute is the gate to the relevancy. The provisions of 299.1 says that the court shall limit the victim impact testimony to these specific provisions. Whether or not it is otherwise relevant is sort of the secondary consideration. First, it has to meet the muster of 299.1, which limits to those six provisions of the offense. And then the court can take on relevancy. The consideration isn't relevancy first, and then does it meet the statute.
Other than capital offenses, which are quite different in the statutory scheme, both in the considerations the jury would have to consider, as well as the statutes involved. But other than capital cases, are you aware of any case where we have reversed a trial court for evidence received at sentencing? It's an abuse of discretion standard of review. Have we ever found that the trial court has abused its discretion by allowing any evidence in at sentencing?
Your Honor, other than death penalty cases, I cannot recall a case specifically.
So this would be a first case in which we expressly told a trial court there is certain evidence you may not consider.
As far as I'm aware, outside of the death penalty context, yes, and I think it is appropriate to do in this case because the trial court so plainly misinterpreted the statute.
But the analogy you used in terms of the death penalty is not really applicable here, because when you're dealing with the death penalty case, you've got a discrete act and then looking at future dangerousness, whereas here you've got an act that was informed by past behavior that is a part of what is the victim's fear. So aren't they really distinguishable?
It's distinguishable, but I think it is instructive to the court that the case law and the legislature has sought fit to allow the testimony that was, the types of testimony that was at issue in this case, specifically prior conduct, evidence of prior conduct. The legislature and case law has sought to limit that to the most serious types of cases for a specific provision that
but that's
only
as a predictor. This is different. Of the purpose behind this particular victim impact statement is so the court can get the full understanding of the impact upon the state of the victim. So why wouldn't I could understand if it were different past behavior, such as a grand larceny or an assault on another person, but this is the same course or conduct of behavior. So going back to Judge Annunziata's question, why doesn't it circle back to the plain language of the statute?
Yes, because the evidence that was admitted in this case over objection was the actual evidence of those prior convictions, which is not victim impact testimony.
But it was one of, this is finding out her last name that heightened or increased her fear, finding out where she lived, finding out where her child went to get medical care when they traveled to South Carolina. I mean, wouldn't those be things that impact or inform what the court could understand is now the victim's fear and how it impacted her? Because these were things that weren't known previously.
Those are, had the victim been testifying about those things in 2001, at the 2001 sentencing hearing, I think that that is, would be proper victim impact testimony because it is the impact of that 2001 conviction on her psychological and perhaps financial considerations. The reason that it was error in this case is because that was not the impact of this particular offense. She was testifying about the impact of the prior offense.
I think the testimony was the impact of this offense on her was as a result of a combined experience with this perpetrator. There's no way to excise the history that she had with this defendant from how she felt when it happened again in this offense. I don't think there's any way to excise it logically or in a common sense way.
Yes, Joan, I see that I'm into my rebuttal time. May I respond to that question? I think that
it's not a question. I made a statement, but what do you think?
I'll say again that I believe that the issue and the error in this case is that they specifically allowed that testimony. The court, she could have testified that because he had this prior conviction, this is how I feel now. The court should not have allowed the testimony of that evidence.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Yates, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, Your Honor, Rachel Yates on behalf of the Commonwealth. The trial court properly admitted relevant sentencing evidence in this case, either under the plain language of the victim impact statements, code sections, or as relevant sentencing evidence more generally. But as the court has already pointed to, this particular evidence would be admissible under either of two subsections in 192.299.1. First, as the nature and extent of the psychological injury the victim in this case suffered, or under the catch-all provision in subpart 6, such other information as the court may require related to the impact of the offense upon this victim. It is certainly related to the impact of this offense upon this victim.
Is it your position that victim impact testimony, or let me rephrase it, the testimony from a victim, regardless of what we call it, is limited to those six subsections in the statute?
No, Your Honor. This statute has been interpreted to be one of admissibility, not inadmissibility.
This is a floor, not a ceiling, on what a victim can testify to.
Yes, Your Honor, and has to be allowed to testify to, as a matter of fact. This code section was designed to give victims certain rights and provide that they shall be allowed to testify to these particular things. And beyond that, it's in the discretion of the trial court as to what's relevant and what would help it in fashioning a sentence.
Well, what do we make then of the language of 295.3 that says the court shall limit the victim's testimony to the factors?
To the extent that it is a requirement, then that requirement is limited only to these factors. But beyond that, in multiple cases, in the Thomas Supreme Court of Virginia case, Rock, and in Harvey, the court has made clear that it is one generally of admissibility, and it is not in any way designed to otherwise limit the discretion of the trial court.
I think counsel's point is that it's factually outside of what's relevant to this particular crime. Do you want to speak specifically to that? I mean, it sounds like her reading of the statute is a little bit more narrow, and she's encouraging us to read it that way.
Yes, Your Honor. To the extent that the trial court made a decision as to admissibility, any necessary factual predicates that the trial court relied on to reach that point. So for the trial court to have found that it is this particular evidence is related, that would be a factual finding. And it is certainly not plainly wrong or without evidence to support it in this case. So,
what about to her point that the facts that were testified really related specifically to the underlying prior crime?
It certainly relates to the underlying prior crime, but it also directly relates to why she is so terrified of this gentleman in this particular case. And to get into some of the specifics of that, although some have been taken up earlier today, the first threats in writing case in 2012, there were 25 explicit death threats, including those describing how Baldwin would not only kill her, the victim in this case, but her disabled daughter and her sister. And then the reason it's so important for the sentencing court to have heard the specifics of these past crimes was because it informs how terrified she is now. Because this individual specifically let her know that not only had he found all of these identifying details about her, where her sister lived, where she takes her car to get fixed, now he knows what her last name is because of those prior court proceedings. That makes his current threats, that five-year sentence that he got last time, that means nothing to him. That's what he wrote in one of the current threats to her, that he will wait forever to hear her screams. That's why this is so terrifying, because he's followed through on his threats in the past and continued to haunt her. And so that's why the evidence in this case was admissible, not only from the plain language of the statute, but even beyond that, as relevant admissible sentencing evidence. Otherwise, Your Honor...
Typically, the court, if there were a probation report, certainly, the prior convictions are before the court in any event.
Yes, Your Honor.
Does it change anything that kind of evidence is admissible under other statute or other case law?
Your Honor, I believe my opposing counsel conceded at the trial court level and today that the fact of these prior convictions is certainly admissible, and that's not in dispute.
In any event.
In any event.
Whether you have a victim impact statement or not.
Yes, Your Honor. But these particular details otherwise would not be apparent on the face of the conviction order, for instance, or the sentencing order.
Just the convictions.
Yes, Your Honor. Otherwise, Your Honor, if the court doesn't have further questions, I would rest on my brief and ask the court to affirm.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, I think you have about 2 minutes for your rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor.
We'll try to let you get through it. Okay?
Thank you. I welcome the questions. Your Honor, in response, the... generally, I believe that the Attorney General's argument in this case is that this evidence generally was relevant and so it was admissible. That is not the standard. The 19.2, 295.3 says the court shall limit victim impact testimony to these enumerated provisions in 299.1. As I said, the victim impact statute is the gate to admissibility before the court can consider the relevance, not the other way around.
Suppose instead of the victim testifying here, the probation officer had gone back and read the police reports involving the prior offenses, and the probation officer offered that testimony to the court. Would that be prohibited?
Yes, Your Honor, that would be prohibited.
Why?
Well, under several reasons. I think there would be other objections that would be made, hearsay, personal knowledge, those sorts of
but
things.
But, you know, suppose you, let's just talk about relevancy. Is it relevant?
Your Honor, I believe that it would not be relevant to this specific offense because the what is relevant to this specific offense is the evidence of this offense,
so
not
so
of a
your argument is that the probation officer can testify about the fact that he was convicted previously and the sentence he received, but can't tell the court any of the details of the offense.
That would be, I think,
but
admissible.
It would be relevant for sentencing purposes.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
It would be relevant as to a proper sentence with respect to this particular offense, would it not?
Your Honor, I respectfully, no. I don't believe that the
prior history, the proclivity to keep repeating the same behavior would not be relevant to a judge who's going to sentence an individual who's yet offended?
Your Honor, the evidence, I believe, and I've said that the fact of a prior conviction, yes, that is certainly relevant, and that is something that would be admitted through the pre-sentence investigation report, and the probation officer could testify that he has his prior record. That, yes, I believe that is admissible evidence and would be relevant. What I don't believe is relevant.
Same answer, in other words.
Yes, Your Honor. And I see my time has expired.
Thank you, counsel. We're going to come down.